Accession number 272, Mr. Malcolm Frost, reel 9. Now, what happened? Anything else about the rest of the voyage, or where did you pull into?
We pulled in the North Ports of Call coming back, in similar ones to which we'd gone out with. Singapore. Don't remember going back into Colombo, but certainly went through the Suez, back through the Suez, through the Med to Gibraltar, and then back home. I remember the customs people that we were going to have to go through actually came on board. We anchored up outside the Isle of Wight, near Cowes, I believe, in the Southampton water, and the customs people came aboard to clear the prisoners, so that when they docked, they were coming off and weren't going to go through any more customs formalities. They were going to be whipped away and shipped, and they were gone. So they actually cleared customs on board before the boat docked. I remember standing on the upper deck with my best friend John Fox, looking out on the light Southampton, and finding it hard to believe I was actually back in England, to be totally honest. I remember sort of a tear coming into my eye when I sort of thought about it. We got off the boat the following day. We went through customs. They were fairly lenient. Although we
what do you mean by lenient?
Well, they weren't too worried about cigarettes and things like that, but what they were more concerned with were weapons and ammunition. I don't think, and that sounds ludicrous, but what we did, when you wore your army gaiters or putties, as they call them, you wanted to make sure your trousers sort of shaped round the top of your gaiters. So what we actually did, we took the sling from an ammunition holder, because you had a, I don't know how to describe it, it's like a linen, a fabric holder with pouches that the ammunition went into.
Yeah.
And the strap itself was a hollow strap, so we cut that into a length. We then put some live rounds of ammunition inside, tucked them inside, and made like a circle, which you then slipped over your leg and round your trouser leg, so your trouser leg was actually sort of weighted down round your puttee or your gaiters. And we were told they were going to be looking for ammunition. We'd still got these. I remember a lot of us taking these things and sort of casting them gently overboard that night, because we thought they might pick these up as illegal ammunition coming into the country. But apart from that, the customs was a mere formality before we were coming back.
And the whole regiment came ashore? A whole battalion?
No, I don't think the whole battalion didn't come back. UK, because
they
were going to Suez. So a lot of the forward, I think, trying to think back, I think the forward party got off at Suez with some of the battalion. I think the rest of the battalion was shipped later. But what we came across in the Asturias was with the POWs and all the national servicemen and others who were being shipped back for demob, which is quite a big, large contingent.
Now tell me about the demob procedure.
We got off at Southampton, and we were remembering that I'd been Royal Norfolk's transfer de Fusiliers. We were being shipped back to Britannia Barracks for demob. We were put in the charge of my best mate John Fox. He was then a full corporal, and there was just, I think there were 8 or 10 of us left of the unit that had originally sort of joined up, because some of them had already come back and been demobbed. Some of them were still with the battalion because they weren't quite ready for demob. But there was a small group of us who were coming back to Norfolk's. So we were going to come back to Norwich that night. One thing we hadn't had while we were abroad were fish and chips. We were anxious to find some fish and chips. So we got off the train Liverpool Street. As a group, we went round Aldgate, around the area, and they're looking for a fish and chip shop, but we didn't find one. What we did find was somebody standing on a street corner spouting some communist, I don't know why they did it in London, you probably was a London based, but came across this chap with a small group around him. He was talking politics, and we stopped to listen. Well, within a short space of time, two or three policemen appeared on the scene. I think they detected there might be some trouble, and we were sort of ushered away. But anyway, there wasn't any trouble, and we got on the train back to Norwich.
How did you react to this communist agitation?
Well, we chose to ignore it, to be totally honest. But I think there was a feeling we might have caused a bit of an upset, because it was obvious where we'd come from. But we got we got back on the train, and we got back to Norwich station about 2 o'clock in the morning.
And this is September.
Yeah. And we were met by the orderly officer and one of the NCOs. We were treated very, very well. We were taken back to barracks in the early hours, and they had produced a duty cook who provided us with a hot meal, which I thought was brilliant, because it was then up past 2-3 o'clock in the morning. We were given the chance to have a kip, and we were processed fairly quickly and sent them on disembarkation leave.
Now, what was there any process involved, or was it just...
Literally, just a bit of paperwork, and then we were off.
Proper medical?
No, not at that point.
Did you get a DMARC?
We got a warrant, no. No, we just got a train warrant to see us home, and that was it. We were shipped back, we sent home for about 14, 15 days disembarkation leave, or DMOB leave. I remember coming home. I think my father had watched a news item somewhere where the Asturias docked and seen the prisoners of war disembark. I know he's stupid, but when he came home from work and I hid up, and I remember him sort of walking in the house and saying to my mum, "Was there any news?" And she said, "No." He said, "We haven't heard anything yet." She said, "No." And I came out of the cupboard, and he was, I can always, I mean, he's been dead a lot of years, but I can still see the expression on his face. So I had a leave in the village, sort of welcomed back as a bit of a hero, really, because I was the only person from the village that had gone out there. And then we went back to barracks to be processed for our final demob and for our 3.5 years territory service. And that was the next sort of episode, basically.
Now, we don't do much about the territorial. Look, no. Can you just explain what your territorial commitment was?
Well, it was
which battalion were you put in?
With the 1st Battalion Norfolks. I've got my discharge book somewhere. I went to Norfolks anyway, and
it wouldn't be the first, so they'd be regular, no. Wouldn't it?
It was territorial army that was said to be. It didn't say what regiment it was.
And what were your TA service Norfolks commitments?
It was weekends. You had to do a certain number of weekend camps, and you also had to do a 2-week annual camp. I did my first camp, which was going to be in 54, because I'd been demobbed in 53. I had started to become a supply teacher, and the army camp, or the territorial army camp, which was on Salisbury Plain, coincided with term time. So I got absence of leave from that, and instead, I was asked to report to barracks for a fortnight to do signals training with recruits in lieu of territorial camp service. I arrived at Britannia Barracks, felt extremely unwell, was told I was going to see the adjutant, finished up in the toilet being violently ill and sick, and eventually was put into sick bay. And within a few hours, I was in the local hospital with a raging temperature, and 3 days later, diagnosed that I'd contracted malaria. I don't believe we had Paladin every day, and I subsequently found that when you came back to the UK, you should have been on a regime of tablets for a minimum, I think, of 6 weeks, but I don't recall ever being given them. But I certainly contracted malaria, and I was quite ill for a period. I didn't do any territorial service, basically, because I was in hospital the whole time. I lost about a stone and a half in weight. It took them about 3 days to diagnose what the problem was. And I didn't do another camp until the following year, which we did in the Stanford Battle Area here in Norfolk. But it was regular camps and weekends, but there was manoeuvres, exercises, range work, still can carry on, rifle shooting, brain gun, so on, just a normal sort of army type activities.
Did you think of carrying on, you know, because you could stay in the TA, of course.
No, I'd had my fill by then, to be honest. I had thought about staying on as a regular soldier one time, and I think if I had done, I could have probably worked towards a commission, but I decided that it wasn't for me. So once my territorial service was finished, I took a final discharge from the National Service and full-time military service, and that was it.
What about you? So we get you back into civilian life. How did you get back into civilian? I mean, you said you started as a supply. Tell us what you did.
I'd mentioned before that I'd not, my A-level results were not suitable for university. So I applied for Teachers Training College, and I got a place at Borough Road, Middlesex, which is the oldest Teachers Training College. And once you'd got a place, assured place, then your local education authority were entitled to give you a teaching post, which, when you think about it, was absolutely ridiculous, because I was going to start teaching, and I'd never taught anybody in my life. But because I'd got a place at Teachers Training College, which was going to be the following September, I was allowed to teach. And I went to a small village school in the wilds of Norfolk for my first teaching post, to take the role of headmistress whose children had contracted measles. I was there for a few weeks. Then I went to a school much nearer to home, about 4 miles away, did the rest of my teaching, supply teaching there, with a class of 9 to 14 year olds in the little village school. And it was then off to teachers college, training college. But after my first teaching practice at a large school in East Coton, Middlesex, I decided that the education profession was not for me.
Why? Just didn't enjoy it?
I didn't enjoy it. I was told I would have made a good teacher, but I didn't enjoy it. And I looked for employment elsewhere, and that's how I finished up at the Norwich Union.
Now, just briefly say what your career was in there, because it's quite an interesting career, but just briefly, because it's obviously...
The music thing is, when I went, applied for a job there, because I was in digs with a young lad from Norwich, who, when I said I was not going to carry on training, he said, try the Norwich Union, which I did. I went for an interview, but I'd not really had any employment, and I'd got no references, apart from my army reference, which I've got here, and a personal letter of reference from the local doctor and also the local headmaster. But when I was asked for references, I said, well, I'd got these, and they said, well, they're no good. I said, well, I've got my army reference. And the old boy, who was then what they called the chief of staff, said, well, that's no good. I said, well, I'm sorry, but that's all I've got. So I gave it to him, and he took it off, and off he went. And he came back, and he said, I remember, he said, I've got to apologise, he said, I've never seen a reference army reference like that one. I said, why? He said, well, he said, I've just never seen one like that. He said, that's fine as far as I'm concerned. So I was given employment, basically, on my army.
Is it
reference.
The Norwich Commercial Union, or was it just the Norwich Union?
Norwich Union.
Norwich Union, then.
Yeah.
And what are their insurance?
Norwich Union Life, it was. Norwich Union Life Insurance, yeah.
And what was your job first?
Well, I went into... the forerunner of computers were punch cards. We know whether you ever seen... Hollerith type and Hollerith cards, and it was punch cards. And I went into a mechanised accounting area and started taking professional exams. And then, because we brought in the first computers, because I was in the mechanised accounting area, I'd never done insurance, I went into computer area and began training up as a computer programmer.
And that was your career?
And I then took charge of all the operations and computer operations. That became my career, yeah.
Now, what about your contacts with your old comrades? Are you in any of the old comrades associations? You're in
Korean
Vets?
Yeah, I belong to the Korean Vets.
What does that do for you?
I get a regular newsletter from the Norfolk branch. I get the regular journal, national journal, from the Korean Vets. And I'm in the 1st Battalion Fusiliers Regimental Association. And I go to TAR, if I can, once a year in October and meet up with... They have a Korean Veterans... 1st Battalion Fusiliers Korean Veterans Reunion. It's Korean veterans only. And there's usually about 70 to 80 of us turn up in October at the TAR and have a get-together. And some of them... Most of them are Londoners, but some of them are from Norfolk. One of the top male ones that I served with.
And is it important to you being in these various associations?
Well, yeah, I think it's right to keep in touch because, you know, I've got a friend at Yarmouth I keep in touch with, or Galston, he lives. The one in Norwich I get in touch with occasionally, not all the time. But I just think they were good to me as a recruit because I used to suffer with terrible migraines and they used to help me an awful lot. But I've kept in touch through the association with some of them, yeah.
Thank you very much.